Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the TMGF. It's the Michael Gay Show on a beautiful Saturday here in the ATL. And again, welcome. The time is now 6:03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3:03 p.m. on the West Coast. Today is May the 8th, 2020. And it's been a very interesting week, and a very interesting week since the last time I spoke with you. A lot of things going on, a lot of things still continue from the week before. But, wow, we got a few topics we're going to talk about. Now, this is Mother's Day's weekend, Mother's Day weekend. So happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. Oh, I got to open up the chat. Let me go ahead and jump on that. I just got back in not too long ago. I was rushing to get back to do the show. Happy Mother's Day to all the ladies, all the mothers out there. And even some of the men, you know, sometimes there's some men out there that have to play a mother role, depending on the situation. So wishing that you're having a great weekend, and tomorrow will be just fantastic for you. Now, we got some topics we're going to get into, and let me pull up the itinerary as I prepare for the show. Let's see. Drill down. I'm trying to do everything all at one time here, so bear with me. Let's see. Okay, so we're going to get into this rocket that's out of control. That's going. What is it? Is it 18,000 miles per hour around the Earth? It's like 18,000 miles per hour circling the Earth. and they don't know where it's going to crash, because eventually it's going to happen. Eventually it's going to land somewhere on the planet. Now, they're hoping it's going to land in the ocean, which I believe they said that the ocean is 70, I'm sorry, the Earth is 70% water. So they're guessing. They're just guessing. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm going to keep looking up in the sky tonight, because I mean, if they don't know, nobody knows. They're trying to calculate it. But you're talking about something that's moving at that speed, and not knowing the trajectory of it when it comes down. It is a wild guess. It is truly a wild guess. So that's something that we're going to talk about. And by it being Mother's Day weekend, a few of the co-hosts are not going to be able to make the show. They got company coming from out of town. I understand that. Plus, as I'm speaking with you now, I'm opening up the chat room, so bear with me for a moment. I'm just saying welcome to the people in the chat room. Welcome to TMGS. And there we go. Okay, so chat room is now open. And by the way, if you're listening to us on the internet through Blog Talk Radio, if you don't want to call in, if you're listening through your phone, or if you call on the phone and you're listening on the internet, you can go to the chat room and post your questions or comments. So, celebrating Marvin Gaye's 50th anniversary for the album What's Going On. 50 years ago is going to be our conversation in the next hour. I want to hold on to that, because I just listened to the entire album, and it's just so amazing. So amazing how that album is true to the day. Everything he says, every topic, every lyric, is just on point to the times that we're in now. I mean, he speaks of war, he speaks of love and unity, he speaks of brutality, you know, marching picket signs, you know. I mean, it's just so amazing how Marvin had a vision 50 years ago when that album was released. I'm 59. I was 9 years old when that album was released. And I remember just playing it and playing it and playing it. Not just me, my brothers would play it, and I got hooked on it. I mean, I was listening. And a lot of stuff that he was saying, I didn't understand at the time. But as I grew older and started looking at things, what was going on, I started understanding the question, what's going on? And even to this day, those words, that album, that cover, the whole thing resonates. I mean, it's just a masterpiece. It's just a masterpiece of work that Marvin Gaye created 50 years ago. So we're going to get into that conversation later on. And I have some of the music, which I'll probably pop up some in the first hour. And I got a little clip of an interview that he did. And it was just so great just to hear his voice just speaking, and how calm and how relaxed he was, type of guy he was. And also I'll share with you a little story about how I had a chance to speak with him over a telephone. Yeah, that was interesting. And as I said, China's rocket is out of control. They say it's going to hit Earth at some point around maybe 10 or 11 o'clock tonight. I guess I'm going to stay up. No, I'm just joking, but, you know, we'll see what happens. Let's see. Janet had put together the itinerary here. So recent bombing in Afghanistan, we'll try to get to that. A man steals a police car during a bizarre high-speed chase, which that's normally happens. And then a police officer shoots another fellow officer, which happened here. How does that happen? But those are some of the topics we're going to get into this evening. And I might switch up. That's just me. I sometimes just switch up and look at other things to talk about. I really had said to Jen and I like for us to talk about the, you know, from the phonograph, the record player, to downloads. Because we have talked about technology before here on the show and the advancement of it and how it's gone from a piece of wax to, which was, of course, the record. And then it went on to tape, the 8-track, the cassette. And then it went to the CD. And now it's, hey, just buy it and just download it onto your phone or your computer. Amazing, isn't it? Technology, something else. I might still talk about that because I have some great memories about the 8-track. One thing I hated is that when you're really in the groove of that song on that 8-track, and then it would all of a sudden start fading in the middle of that song, and all of a sudden you hear that little click, and then all of a sudden the song would fade back in a little bit into the last part that was playing. I hated that, though. I really did. I hated it. But, hey, it was continuous play. I remember us driving from California to Detroit, and I was with my stepfather, my brothers and I, and he had a Aretha Franklin tape on. I liked the songs, but I knew it was coming. At some point, you knew it was coming, so you had to prepare yourself. So with that being said, I'm waiting for some of the co-hosts to drop in, open up their mics. Just spoke with Timon Shipp. Timon said he'll be here momentarily. So in the meantime, I don't want to start any topics right now. So let's take a look at something here. What I want to do is, as I scroll through the library of music, I want to go ahead and play a little something by Marvin as we wait for the other co-hosts. Let's see here. I think I got it. Okay, I see a hand just waved. Let me open up the mic here. I believe that's Cotton.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hey, you must be out and about.
Yeah, it is Cotton Campbell, and I am in my car.
No problem. I can hear you clearly. How are you doing on this beautiful Saturday?
I'm good. You know, I didn't take any medication this morning, so I'm able to get on. I'm awake. Now that Norco had me like dozing in and out, in and out, in and out. So some of the shows I've missed for sure, because in the moment I was in one moment and out the next. Is that?
I understand that. I definitely understand that. Yeah. This weekend I kind of figured it was going to be a tough weekend to do the show because it is Mother's Day weekend. Austin Crenshaw, he took a shot yesterday because he didn't know how he was going to do it today. I understand it, but I definitely want to do the show. I didn't want to do a rebroadcast. I definitely want to do it because, to me, this 50 year of Marvin Gaye, I really want to do that of what's going on now. It's monumental. It really is. So I definitely want to do that. But let's be here. Let me go ahead and do this. I'm going to play one of these as we get back and wait for the other one. And then I'll go ahead and look up the topic. Okay.
Okay.
Here's one of my favorite songs. And it's not what most people might think. But here's one of my favorite songs. And it's truly awesome. It speaks volumes. We'll be right back. You're listening to the TMGS.
Oh, don't go and talk about my father.
Talk about my father.
on the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy, me. Our things ain't what they used to be. Radiation underground and in the sky, animals and birds who live nearby are alive. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more be used from man? Can't you stand?
MGS, that's Marvin Gaye's Mercy, Mercy Me. You know, everybody loves What's Going On. And, of course, I love that song, too. But it's something about that transition from, you know, oh, don't talk about my father. God is my friend. And then goes into Mercy, Mercy Me. The way Marvin did these things, or did these songs, the way he made them just transition to one another. It's just so amazing. So amazing. And I'm not going to keep playing them out because I'm going to wait until the second hour to give you guys a little bit more. And also, I managed to find a clip of an interview that he did. And it's interesting of what he says. So we got another co-host here. Mr. Timon Ship. What's up, my brother Timon?
What's up, man? Just leaving the grocery store, man, on my way home, trying to get, because I got a concert to go to tonight, going to see your boy Ernie Watts play some jazz over at the Baked Potato, old stomping spot of yours. So, yeah.
Whoa, wait a minute. The Baked Potato still exists?
Yes, brother. Don Randy is still around.
In Studio City?
Yes.
Wow. Wow, man. Oh, my God. You know, you hear about places shutting down. And
right.
I remember going to the Baked Potato years ago. And you'll never believe who I saw perform. They would do it every Tuesday night. It was Bobby Mason on drums, Patrice Rushen on keyboard.
Uh-huh.
Lee Rittenour on guitar, Abe Laborio on bass, and I think his name was Chuck Foreman on percussions. And they do it every first Tuesday of the month. Wow, I didn't know that existed.
Don Randy, you know, he owned it. And he was always... you know, he kept it up. I mean, you know, like the only you got to have your vaccination card to go in there. But they're gonna. I'll probably have to get over there by 6:30 or so to get in, get a spot. You know. And
that's not everywhere.
Yeah, 8 o'clock. Yes, 8 o'clock show, and it's got the great Ernie Watts on tenor sax with his quintet.
Wow.
And, you know,
man,
you mentioned Lee Rittenour. You mentioned Lee, and Ernie Watts was on a few of Lee Rittenour albums. Ernie's been around a long time. Yeah, very well-known tenor sax player, man, a great sound. I don't know who his drummer and bass player is, but he plays with these White Cats. But he's center stage tonight, yeah.
Yeah, so
I'm just running my errands. Still going.
And for you folks that are listening, but I have to say, for the folks who are listening, the Baked Potato, to be honest, it's the most intimate spot you can go to see a show. I mean, it's like being in it's not huge. It's really a small place. But, I mean, the entertainment that they have brought there over the years was just so phenomenal.
Right.
I mean, just one of the greatest musicians would come through that camp.
Yeah, their calendar is already up. Yeah, if you get a chance, just go Baked Potato and check their calendar, man. Their calendar, you know, they got all kinds of cats coming. You know, they're going to be doing blues, jazz, because, you know, California is going to open up completely June 15th is when the governor has it planned. So it will be all the way live. California. Yeah, so that's why let me go over here and decompress and you know check out some jazz. I would have took another friend, but I didn't know she was in town or not. So I just bought myself a ticket. I've been waiting to see me some jazz, and hey, you know, so.
Right. I get it. All right. Well, thank you for telling me about that. All right, so let me go into a topic here that I think we need to talk about while we're here. And let's see. Bringing it, boy. Hello, MG. It's the 909 area. Okay, I see. All right. Well, you're welcome to call in. And, call in as we get ready to talk about this whole topic. And I'm going to jump around a couple of according to Newsbreak, the Department of Justice proposes crackdown on ghost guns following Biden's pledge. Okay, ghost guns. All right, so for you guys who don't know what ghost guns are, they're untraceable. You can put these damn things together in about, 30 minutes? And it's a scary thought that people can actually purchase these things and put together a weapon.
Right.
And use it and there's no problem. I mean, there's, well, it's a problem, but there's no way to trace it.
Right.
You can buy these online. So let me read this real quick, just a little segment of it. The Department of Justice on Friday took aim at ghost guns, proposing to close a loophole that allows people to avoid background checks as they purchase guns without serial numbers. A proposed rule from the Biden administration expands the definition of I have to go ahead and hit read more. Oh, wait a minute. What happened? All right, so as I wait on that, the definition of it, you guys know what it is. Those are scary weapons, and I'm trying to think of the movie. What's his name? The guy, he always plays a certain type of character. He always plays the bad guy. If you remember the movie he played in, you know, the airplane with the prisoners on it.
Are you talking about John McAvoy?
Right.
John
remember
McAvoy.
He played in a movie, John McAvoy, right. Remember when he played in a movie where he had something similar to that? It was like a little plastic gun where he was going to try to kill a police officer. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Now think about how long ago that movie was made. And now it's reality.
Right.
A ghost gun is untraceable. Because he was going to go to this event, you know, the gun can't be detected by metal detectors because it's made out of whatever. And, you know, I thought that was kind of freaky when I saw the movie. But now you look at what it's been over 20-something years, I believe, since that movie was made. But now that gun is a reality.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on it?
I mean, my thoughts on it, Mike, has always been, you know, why do you need all of this stuff? You know, why are you building ghost guns? And you know how gullible our society is. And, you know, you've already demonized, you know, and then through the media, you've set things up to where, hey, oh, I think I need this. You know, it's like the people when they say, oh, they're, you know, they got my information. No, you gave it to them. They didn't take nothing from you. You gave it to them. You join Facebook, they going to get your information. You gave up your privacy when you start getting on the vent. So the same with these ghost guns. You got people getting guns that, you know, what, a regular 9mm ain't enough? You know, who are you trying to kill? Where is all this to where we're doing all this craziness? You know, that's like the AR-15. Why are you living in the suburbs, but you need an AR-15? You know, I just don't understand. And that's why we're in trouble because we got so many people that they just don't stop. It's never enough. You know, I don't want a 38. I got to have a 44. I don't get a 44. I need a 50 caliber. I need a machine gun. I need this. No, you don't.
No, I need an A.
But you
need, I need a bazooka.
Yeah, well,
I need a rocket launcher.
Yeah, you know, what you need to do is read a book, you know. You need to sit down and read a book. Quit messing with yourself. You know, quit doing things. Quit getting all in your head. Stay off Facebook. You know, I don't know. There's no hope for him, Mike.
I like that. That's funny. Hey, you guys who are listening in, if you have any questions or comments, if you want to chime in, go ahead and hit the number one. I'll open up your mic. And also for the folks that are listening online, the chat room is open. Bringing it, boy. I see that you said, okay, it's Eric 909. So you can call in whenever you're ready, and I'll open up your mic. All right, but it is crazy that these guns are available, and I like what you said. That what do you need? Why do you need a ghost gun? Who are you trying to kill and not get caught? That's basically
right.
That's basically what it means.
Like I said, a handgun, I get it. Defending yourself, no problem. But, man, you know, bazooka, you know, like you said, 15 AK-47, you know, what's next? An M1? What do you need? Who is these
okay,
people
so
that
bringing
follow
it,
you while you're living in these nice areas?
Okay, so bringing it, boy, just put in the chat room, what is, I guess it meant, what is it of anybody's business how many firearms a person owns? That was not the question. It was the type of firearms and why do you need these type of firearms? What is, I mean, you can't tell me that you got an AR-15 to go hunting. Bambi would be shredded cheese, right? Okay, so that's not a hunting gun. And I understand folks need or want a weapon to protect their family, their homes, and everything. But we're talking about these ghost guns, untraceable guns
now, wait a minute, Mike.
That are available.
Mike, now you know on Facebook they posted where all these people took pictures of all the guns that they got. And, Mike, you'd have been blown away. I'm talking
I've seen them.
35, 40, yep. 50. Almost 100 different types of guns, women and men.
Absolutely.
I mean, just
here's the thing though, Tommy. I can understand gun collectors, you know, depending on, you know, people who collect guns. It might be a gun from, I don't know, a Ruger or whatever, you know, that's a classic or that's something that you can't find anymore. I can understand being a gun collector to a certain extent, but like you said, these assault weapons, I don't understand that.
But Mike, you
I don't
collect,
understand.
These people are out of control. You're buying guns. The dude who killed people in Sandy Hook, his mother mm-hmm. used to take him shooting, bought him his AR-15.
Okay.
He knew the boy had, shoot, his own daddy was scared of him. He wouldn't even come visit him. Okay? And the boy shot up a grade school. I'm still saying, whether you're a gun collector or whatever, maybe you own a gun shop. But, man, how many guns do you need? And then you trip when one of them might come up missing. You know, especially if you're one of those that got an ego problem and you bragging. And you tell all your buddies that you got all your collection of guns, and somebody breaking your house and steal your guns.
Mm-hmm.
Then what are you gonna do? But I'm just
right.
saying, it's too much. And look, it's like the guy who buys the fastest car. How fast are you trying to go, bruh? Okay, do you want to be an Indy car driver? Okay, but when you can't slow down fast, remember that actor died. Because the guy who was
right.
driving his car couldn't handle that car. But, yeah, he had to have that car. And, yeah, it was expensive. It was so fast, couldn't handle it. And guess what?
Right.
He died,
yeah.
and the guy ran. So I'm just saying. I'm not saying you shouldn't have a gun. I'm not against guns. I'm just saying, bruh, what's next? Like you said, a rocket launcher, a bazooka. Because, trust me, if they could get it, Mike, they would do it.
They'll grab it, right. But now I'm gonna go ahead and read what Bringing It. Okay, so Bringing It Boy responded. Bringing It Boy, you know how to call in. So if you want to talk, you can talk. You know how to call the show. But if not, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and read your response here. You have here, as long as a person doesn't use the gun to intentionally harm anyone, then there is no difference between a ghost gun or a AR-15. Yes, there is. An AR-15 has serial numbers on it. Unless you scratch them off.
But as
yes, there's
a
difference.
Okay, there
the
is
ghost
a difference.
Gun is not a, the ghost gun is not manufactured through an actual gun company.
Right.
Per se. It's not. It's intended to not be traceable. Bringing It Boy, come on now. You should know better than that. That's why they call it the ghost gun. You can't see it. You can't track it.
Well, and also, Mike.
A firearm is a firearm. Come on. Look, hold on a minute. Bringing It Boy, come on now. All right, I'm going to stop reading your points because I don't care the excuses that you're making here now. Come on. You and I talk. I know a firearm is a firearm. What's legal, what's illegal is illegal. So, okay, go ahead. Time it.
But these are the same people who thinks that you're trying to take something from them. Okay, they
right.
think they should be allowed to do whatever the hell they want because it says it's free. Okay? Your First Amendment right gives you to speak what you want, but you can't yell fire in a movie theater, okay?
Right.
Because you'll what? Go to jail, okay? Now if they want to go to jail, let them go to jail. Because then you ain't gonna get no sympathy from me, because you're out of control. You see, you're out of control, and then somebody gonna get hurt, and then you go say, and you know every time there's a mass shooting. Guess what happens? Gun sales go up. Remember that?
All the time. Yep.
Gun sales. Yeah. Right after Sandy Hook. Right after Sandy
Gun
Hook. They didn't even
right.
care. They didn't even care, Mike. So if they're not thinking about what you're saying, they think you're trying
right.
to take something from them. I should
go out
and blow up the world.
Well, check this out. Bringing It Boy has chimed in. I see them on the board. I know their area code. I spoke with them. So I want to go ahead and open up their mic. And Bringing It Boy, now, I'm just going to go off of what you just said. So I'm going to read it again. And then I want you to explain what you meant by that. As long as a person doesn't use the gun to intentionally harm anyone, then there is no difference between a ghost gun or an AR-15. There is a difference, but explain to me why you think there is not a difference, or explain to us. Your mic is open. How you doing, and happy Saturday to you.
Good afternoon, and happy Saturday to you. Bringing It Boy is out of the office today, so I thought I would call
okay.
in. So, yes, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
So I wrote this because basically a device that emits a projectile, you know, at a velocity that is could cause damage to anything really that it hits. And I say could because, you know, sometimes you can hit things and it will ricochet and not do any damage. But nevertheless,
right.
So in that case, they are the same. They both are the same in, I don't know, use, I guess.
No.
So I wasn't speaking of necessarily the legality of it.
Go ahead. Uh-huh.
Okay. So I wasn't necessarily speaking of the legalities, but more or less they both do the same thing. They both shoot bullets. So.
Right, but here's the thing.
Let's back up.
An AR-15 is manufactured, mm-hmm. right? Just
mm-hmm.
like a, it's just like a Ruger, it's just like a Glock, it's just like any manufacturer who makes guns. They're manufactured and they have serial numbers, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Traceable.
Mm-hmm.
Every gun
mm-hmm.
is traceable. Just like a car has a VIN number, right, to trace that car. But
mm-hmm.
the problem that I'm looking at that I don't think that you see is that think of the name of it. Ghost, like Casper, gun. It's named that for a reason, because you can't see where it came from. You can't follow it. You can't trace it. That's how come it's becoming a very, issue now that is very troublesome among many folks, because you can go buy these things, put it together in 30 minutes. Commit a crime,
mm-hmm.
shoot or murder a person, but there's no way to trace it because it's not registered at all.
Right.
I think the thing is that what you posted is that between a ghost gun, there's no difference. Are you saying that there's no difference for the fact that they both can do damage, or that there's no difference because the fact that one is registered or has a serial number and the other one doesn't? There is a difference.
Right. I would agree with the first one, was where I was going with it.
Okay. All right. Now we're on track. Yeah, it's a world of difference. And it's scary that people can buy these things.
Well, consider the guns that are used in crimes. People usually will, shave off the serial numbers on those, and, they'll try and throw them in a river, but their fingerprints are still on it.
You know what?
But
you know what? To be honest with you, I hear what you're saying, and you're right. But I'm a avid person when it comes to watching certain crime stories, and see how people try to do that bullshit. And I mean, when it comes to forensic and the way they can find, no matter what some people try to do, they got a way to find it. I've seen so many stories where folks try to use sandpaper, whatever, to take the numbers off. And forensics are so amazing, they can still find it.
Oh, there
I
you
see
go.
It all the time. It's scary as hell. But with a ghost gun, a ghost gun does not have serial numbers at all.
No, but you just said they have forensics though that can find out who belongs to that gun or who used the gun anyway. Not the ghost gun.
Keep in mind, I just said that's why it's called a ghost gun. You cannot see it. You cannot find it. These are very dangerous. There are no serial numbers on a ghost gun. If the person
right,
does
but
not
but you had just mentioned,
print,
I'm sorry, Michael, but you just mentioned that if it was shaved off, then there are other ways to find out, who used that gun to commit that crime. So, I was with you all the way there because they do have ways.
Okay, I'm going to try one more time. I'm talking about the difference between a ghost gun and you mentioned here an AR-15. An AR-15 has serial numbers from the manufacturer. Ghost guns do not have serial numbers. Okay? So there's no way to track it to an owner. A ghost gun has no numbers.
Well, the serial number doesn't track it down to a number. I mean, to an owner. All it does is identify the manufacturer where it came from. We don't have a national registry.
Okay. So let me go to let me go ahead and go to Simon. Simon.
Yes.
You understanding the point I'm saying here?
I understand and I understand her point. She's trying to say that you can still, with forensics, that you can find who has this gun. Well, they would have to be able to get fingerprints,
right,
in order, to do it. So you really have to do – the thing is, if you catch someone with a ghost gun or to find, you have to do some serious, extensive – it wouldn't be as easy if I had an AR-15 or a 9mm. Now, you can shave off serial numbers, but I can get – You can bust up a ghost gun easily, but a 9mm,
right,
you can at least get fingerprints off a 9mm. You may not get fingerprints.
Maybe.
I don't know if you can get fingerprints off a ghost gun, but I understand both sides of what you guys are saying. One, she's stating that, with forensics, we could probably still find out information about what kind of gun it was and who got it. Maybe, but you would have an easier time with forensics probably on an AR-15 or a regular 9mm gun that they
But when you're using a ghost gun, and a ghost gun, as I said, has no serial numbers, and I'm pretty sure a person who uses a ghost gun is going to make sure they don't leave their fingerprints. I saw a story where a guy, the biggest mistake he made was he did wear a glove. He didn't put fingerprints on the weapon. What happened, though, when he threw it away, when he took the glove off, they just turned the glove inside out and found his damn fingerprints. See?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He put it all in the bag and threw it in the river or threw it in the woods, and then they still just turned the glove inside out. But the point I'm trying to say is that as Tyman just said, you can destroy a ghost gun much quicker, much faster than you can an AR-15. Then when you're talking about an AR-15,
I agree with that.
You have to look at when a bullet travels down the barrel of a weapon, and I'm sure you've seen this before, it's going to leave markings. And if it gets that weapon, it's going to show that it matches, that bullet fragment is going to match the hammer or
sure,
whatever.
Sure, because the pin hits the bullet on the way out at impact.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. And the abrasions on it, right. So that's easier to track, as time just said. But come on, a ghost gun. Why is it called a ghost? Explain that.
I don't know. I guess the people that made it through the 3D printer. 3D printers are amazing. I mean, they can make all kinds of evil shit and put it out there for people to hurt each other.
It's easier to dispose of. It's easier to it's harder to track. Think about the word ghost. That's all I'm trying to say. All right, so.
And it's easier to mass produce, you know, so they don't know how many that they're putting out, how many are out floating around there, you know, in the United States or anywhere else for that matter. So that's a problem, too.
You're right.
And the fact that we feel we're constantly seeing people just get crazier and crazier and gullible and gullible. I mean, everybody's, it's the end of the world and there's buying. And I, you know, we're pretty spoiled in the United States. You know, we have freedom that you can't get anyplace else. You can if you wanted to go buy your AR-15, you can go get an AR-15 rifle. Some other country, you're not going to get that. You can go and buy a 50 caliber whatever. You can go to Texas and buy a gun out of the back of someone's car. No ID, no nothing. You can buy it. And that's how easy it is. But then when something happens, everybody says, oh, they're coming to get my gun. No, we're just trying to stop the idiots. We're trying to stop those. They got mental, because they were probably fine when they bought it, and then all of a sudden they lost their mind after they bought the gun. I mean, that's why I brought up Sandy Hook. That boy, his mother took him out to go shooting with an AR-15. They were shooting together. Mm-hmm. But then again, either he didn't take his meds, and all of a sudden, he's like, oh, you spend more time down with those kids than you are with me? Tell you what, I'm going to get you. And then he went down to the school and got the kids. 20 years old. Then he shot himself. And it's like, no one questioned. Dad wasn't involved in his life. Did we know? But then they found out he had all kinds of little, his room was had all the windows sealed with black plastic. He was on, you know, different type of sites that were like QAnon. That wasn't exactly QAnon, but, you know, similar crazy, you know, messy stuff that he had found.
Right.
And he just lost his mind.
Conspiracy theory sites. Right, conspiracy theory sites.
Yeah, but how do you plan for that? How do you, I mean, the guy in Vegas, we didn't know that. The dude took up almost 100 guns, okay, with ammo, and they helped him. They helped him take the stuff up to his room. He got that particular room for, and he tipped him. He tipped him, and he's a multimillionaire. He was a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And he killed 50 people. And the only reason why they couldn't get him because of the part of the – he planned that out so well that he was in the part of that hotel that you couldn't get a clear shot at him. That's why he did that.
Right.
But there again – he needed to have all the guns and all the ammo and all the craziness. Then as soon as they said, guess what went up? Gun sales. That's what blows me away. Why is gun sales going up? Somebody just got killed. You out buying a gun? When children are dying and people are just getting blown away? So, I don't own a gun. I'm not against people who have guns.
That's the answer. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's the answer because it's like, oh, well, you know, I've never had a gun. And if it's, you know, some folks feel like it's getting too close to home now, right? They get that feeling, oh, it's becoming too close to home. It may not be in their state, but be like, well, if that happens over in Nevada, it could happen here in Georgia. It can happen here in So I'm going to have to go ahead. And people look at all these stories that are popping up of these type of shootings, And it is crazy. In fact, just what the other day, what was it, a sixth grader opened fire at a school? Fortunately, no one died, but a sixth grader. Think about how old that girl was. It was a girl. She opened up her little pack and opened fire. I think she hit a teacher and maybe two other students. Look it up. And I'm just saying that. It just popped up on my phone the other day, or yesterday, in fact. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. That's crazy as hell. And, of course, everybody said, well, the parents should be responsible. How did she get the gun? Well, you know, you jump to conclusions because you don't know, did she really get it from the parents? I'm not the type of person to say that she did that. I want to hear more of the investigation. I'm not going to come on this show and say, yeah, the parents are wrong. No, I want to hear what they say, how it went down. You follow me?
Yeah, well, Mike,
well, the parents should have been aware of her mental state. I mean, if their daughter was having issues, you know, then they need to be aware of that and find out what's going on in their kid's life. And, you know, because if their kid's going off the rails and they take an attitude of, well, she's just going through her phase, you know, she'll just work it out and deal with it on her own. And, you know, I'll go do my thing and she does her thing. Or, you know, and so in that case, you got to pay attention.
Well, here's the problem. But here's the problem is that, unfortunately, too many parents treat their kids like they're their best friend.
Mm-hmm.
They don't parent.
I agree.
Too many parents treat their kids like they're their best friend in high school. When a kid gets to a certain age in their teens and kids get to a certain point of where they know they can get away with shit and they can talk a certain way, the parents are, you know, well, calm down. Okay, let's talk about everything. No, you don't do that shit. Because kids, I have to say this. Kids are manipulators. Trust me, I've seen it all the time. Babies, if they want something, what do? They cry until you either give it to them or not.
Mm-hmm.
Babies will cry. If you take, I see babies in stores, and it's so amazing. You go buy the snacks. Now, if you go down the aisle by the vacuum cleaners, the kids are just looking around. You go down the aisle by the, you know, let's say anything else, clothing or anything. But you go by where the snacks and the candies are. Mama, and they point at it. They know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Mama say no. They start crying. And so mama's embarrassed because her kid is acting like a total ass, which is true. Okay. And they go ahead and buy it for them. It's the same thing.
It encourages
when you're teenagers, when you let your kids as babies get away with stuff and they don't understand the word no, and now they become teenagers. Now they know. I've been doing this ever since I was 6 years old. My mama going to buy me whatever the hell I want. Oh, I want that,
well,
that 15.
Well, like I would say, Mike, you know, as you know, I work at juvenile hall for over 30 years. And dealing with juvenile criminals, you know, it is the breaking down of the family structure. And when family structure is gone, when that family is broken, then somebody's going to jail. If dad goes to jail, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to get the son. I can get him too. And if the mom is dating knuckleheads or thugs or whatever, the daughter's going to date thugs. And they end up and pick up this, you know, this type of behavior. And if you go into juvie, you know, they're trying to rehabilitate them now, which they've been trying to rehabilitate them for years. Problem is that we can't, you the discipline and the structure, you got to be able, because they don't want you to put hands on these kids because they've had staff, not all, you know, who have put their hands on a kid and the kid got hurt. But you know, if a kid beats up a staff or beats up a medical staff or a school teacher and then you rush in and put hands on him, so next year the parents are trying to sue you. But it was your kid who initiated. And it is, long as you don't, if he puts hands on anybody, you can put your hands on those kids. But the kids, the main thing is, if you know how to structure juveniles, you know how to talk to them. I'm not talking about kissing their butt, letting them know what the rules are, letting them know, hey, if you want to go there, we can go there. But if you just follow the rules, I'll do whatever I can to help you get your life together and do different things, talk to your probation officer, family members, all this type of stuff, But if you try to go in being their buddy and their pal, that they're going to punk you. They call that punking staff. And I'll end up, you bringing in cheeseburgers, you ain't going to make it. Because the day you don't bring their cheeseburgers or what they want, now they're going to act up,
Right.
And you got to know how to really structure. I don't care if you, Mike, I was dealing with murderers, rapists, gangbangers, kids getting 100 years or 50 years.
Right.
You're not there to tear them down. You're there for, support, motivation, structure, to guide, to mentor. And hopefully that once they get out, they can get into some programs or different things to help better their life. But definitely not there to destroy or tear down.
Let me ask you a question, though, because the time is now 6:57 p.m. here on the East Coast. And I want to ask you this because in a moment we're going to switch topics. I only got 2 hours, but hell, I got about 3 hours worth of conversation. But what happens when you get that one individual who just shuts down? He don't want to listen to you. He's just hard nosed. He's just like, that new person who comes in to the system. And when you call it rehabilitation, what is the rehabilitation? How does that work?
Well, it's like I said, you first check the kid's file out. And when the kid first comes into the unit, the way we used to do it, when you come in through that unit, you bring that one minor and you isolate him in the office and you question him. You go over his file with him, what he's in here for, blah, blah, blah. Then you lay down the rule because the senior staff is going to lay down rules to him. And then when he leaves from the senior and he goes, he's going to get laid down rules by the different other staff who are working it. So because you got three shifts. You got a 6-to-2 shift, 2-to-10 shift, and then a 10-to-6 shift. So if each shift is on the same plane, hey, you're going to have that unit is going to be perfect. If they're not, and one's giving in to whoever and not doing what they're supposed to do, you're going to have problems. When you do your interview with him, you can ask him, look, man, you can let him know, is there anything you need? What gang are you from? Ask him all the information you need and question him and keep, because you have to chart on every kid every day. You have to write in the book about them, how was their day, what are they doing. And if there's programs for them, you can set those things up. They have volunteers come in. So there's a lot of things that can be done to help them better themselves. And, so they're there, but the people got to know how to do it. You have to know how to put that stuff together, and you got to know, how to really, like I said, talk to minors and get them into that. Because now you don't have problems. Yeah,
I would imagine it would require a lot of.
I don't want to keep calling. I don't want to call her pregnant boy. But what's your name again, if you don't mind sharing?
You can just call me Sue.
Sue. Okay, Sue.
Okay.
What's your response to that?
To the what they're doing there with the juveniles. I think. You've got to be the type of person that can read body language, that is in tune with how to respond, a certain form of empathy, but also a firmness knowing that, these children have been harmed. They've been injured emotionally. And given their age, you could almost say they're not responsible for how they turned out, but they have to accept a certain level of responsibility. And so you have to be able to disseminate what this child needs you know, the tough love, or do we have to not so tough, but tough enough to let them know? You know, I have two boys myself, so, or, well, they're grown.
You know, Sue, we play part counselor. At my job, we play part counselor, part psychologist, psychiatrist, mother, father. We play all those roles.
It takes a special kind of person to do that type of work, I tell you what. And so thank you.
Yeah, and it's mind you, you got some that are success stories, and they go in, and they go through and they turn out to be good kids. Then you have those that's all they know, and they go right back to it. And you got some that are brilliant. I mean, I had a kid that hacked into Bank of America. He was so good with computers. I had another kid, who was the drug dealer that's the mathematician or the chemist. And he's a drug dealer, though. And then you got the kid who's the tagger, the graffiti artist. But he's an artist.
The artist,
the kid can paint, So we
and
you got the kid who can do poetry and write. But they need guidance. They need, they need mentoring and the right mentoring on how to get jobs, how to deal with failure, what happens.
How to turn what they know
that
how good they are at into something productive, if they're
exactly.
deep graffiti and they're good at it. You're an artist, kid. If you're good at math, you could be a banker or a corporation, or you could go anywhere with math.
Right, but
science,
as I say to people, prison is full of people with education, with degrees. Because I got my degree, but there are a lot of people who did not. Barry Madoff steal over billion, $100 billion from different people running the Ponzi scheme. I mean, you got Ivan Boesky and who else? Michael Milken. We got all kinds of guys. We got politicians who had great education. And where are they? Sitting in jail just like Pookie and Ray Ray. And had it made. Came from a good home. Got everything they wanted. Mom and dad worked hard, got them to college. Where you sitting at? Now you in jail doing 10 to 20 years. Why? Because of greed. You thought that you were better, whether it was your narcissism or whatever you're into, you fell for it. And they got you.
No consequences. Mom and daddy were off in Paris or, out somewhere else.
Yeah.
And no consequences. They just buy them everything that they wanted.
Right. And you say, how did this guy end up in jail? It came from a two-parent home. College educated him to the best school, best everything. But was he insecure? Was he a narcissist? Did he not get the attention that he needed? Who knows? And there he is,
Well, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, so, when it comes to these type of things with young kids and as you can see, these cases are going to be coming up on the ones who have done some shootings and this and the other. It always takes about 2-3 years before it actually goes to court, right?
Right.
And most people forget. Most people, because it takes time. I mean, it takes a long time. I've kind of wondered, why does it take so long in many cases, why does it take so long to bring these individuals in trial? I understand in a sense why, but it's like the community or the public is like, okay, 2 years down the road. Now, recently, some have been just a year. So, that's one thing I'm really been curious about. Why does it take so long to get these cases rolling so that we can see what the outcome is and bring justice swiftly? They used to use that term. Justice will come swiftly. Remember that? Justice sometimes takes, years.
Well,
get a chance to see the justice. Some family members, the mother, the father, or whatever, might die before they see the justice of their murdered daughter or son.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it take
That's
so
true.
long?
Well, one of the reasons it depends on the severity of the crime. It depends on the severity of the crime. So they're, you know, they're looking at, you know, and also they got to get, you got to, the investigations have to be done. They take time. You got a lot of folks that are dealing with a lot of stuff. I mean, it's just so many cases, you know, because, you know, you got people, when they say caseload, well, you got a caseload. Look how long it took you to get to Chauvin. That dude had a big, they had to build a case. You ever hear him say, I got to build a case against this guy? Well, it takes time to build that case. You got to go back in the past and look it up. Yeah, you got to do all this background work, you know, to really expose how really this guy did whatever he did. You got to do that. And you can't.
And
you
public
can't,
defenders are overwhelmed because most of them can't afford an attorney, you know. They're so expensive, so they get a public defender. So, yeah.
Right. I mean, look at Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani is supposed to, you know, they're after Rudy. And Rudy says, hey, can somebody send me some money? Because it's going to keep him out of jail is going to cost millions of dollars.
Yeah, that's true.
That's
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I have to jump to a different topic, you guys, because, I mean, we could talk about this for the next hour because the time is 7:07 p.m. So we could talk about this and we could keep going on and on and on. But I want to pull up this one other topic, and then we're going to get into Marvin Gaye.
As I mentioned
at the top of the show, as I mentioned, and we're going to hear some of the music, plus we're going to hear one of his interviews. 50 years ago, this album was released, What's Going On? And Rolling Stone magazine, a magazine that all of us are aware of, I'm sure every one of us read, okay? I guess if you're a Rolling Stones magazine fan, I know I've always have been. They always kept on top of the music charts and everything. Said this is the best album of all time. Recently said the best album of all time. So before we get into that, I want to just go into this here, which this was posted almost 2 weeks ago, and I just saw it the other day. Officer convicted of killing Botham Jean in his own home will appeal sentence next week. So that's been about a week ago. So let me run this by. Amber Geiger, the police officer who killed Botham Jean in his own home, will have her appeal heard next week. According to CBS and Dallas, Geiger's appeal argues she killed John by mistake and that her conviction should not have been murder, but criminally negligent homicide. If her appeal goes through, the sentence for a criminally negligent homicide is 6 months or up to 2 years in state jail. In September of 2018, Geiger's entered, we know the whole story there, but I want to skip forward. In the new appeal, which was filed in August of 2020, Geiger's attorneys argued that the evidence originally submitted in the case, quote, was legally insufficient to prove beyond reasonable doubt that Geiger committed murder. They claim Geiger was confused about where she was in her apartment complex since both four floors where her and John's apartments were located look identical. Quote, her mistaken belief negated the culpability to murder because although she intentionally and knowingly caused John's death, she had the right to act in deadly force in self-defense since her belief that deadly force was immediately necessary was reasonable under the circumstances, the appeal read. Geiger had both a taser and pepper spray on her along with the gun she used to kill John. Her lawyers argue though that officers are not trained to use the non-lethal weapon when faced with a deadly situation. Despite the tragic consequences, considering all the evidence, whether admissible or inadmissible, Geiger acted reasonably, the appeal reads, claiming Geiger simply missed the clues. She was entering the wrong apartment. During the trial,
Packers attorneys argue that John's death happened due to the malfunction on his doors, an absurd design, and incompetent management of the apartment. Now, see, that's that bullshit. Blame everyone else. I mean, we've all seen the pictures. We've seen the pictures of each floor, her apartment, his apartment. There was a floor mat there you have to step on to enter the apartment. And her floor mat was not the same as his. That would be a hint and a half to me. Don't you agree? That would be a hint and a half. This ain't my floor mat. This ain't my, you know, mat to walk into my apartment.
How long did she live there? Mike, how long did she live there?
I don't know how long she lived there, but long enough to know.
Now, Mike.
I don't recall how long she lived there.
But they also got numbers on the door, did they not?
Correct.
Didn't you know her apartment number? Right. I've been living here at my spot, at my apartment, for 11 years. I think it's 11 years. We only got 3 floors, Mike. My number is number 8, and everybody has the same mat. But I can tell you, from living in this complex, I know what number 8 is, and I know what number 7 is. Ain't no way I'm going to somebody else's apartment, Mike. I don't care how big it is. You know where you live. Not unless you were drunk. Maybe you took some type of sleeping medication. I don't know. But you didn't just accidentally go into the man's apartment. You went into the man's apartment and you shot him. Be different than saying, oh my God, it's not my place, I'm sorry, and walked out. But you didn't do that. You came in.
But you know what gets me? But what gets me is this, I'm sorry, but what gets me is that when they say that it was when they blame it on the apartment complex, a faulty door, because the door was allegedly ajar. Now my question is this: how many other doors in that complex had that same problem? You follow me? How many other people who lived in that complex had that same problem of the doors not operating correctly?
But, Mike, you walked into the apartment. Don't you? I can walk into my – I have a one-bedroom apartment, Mike. I can tell when I'm in my apartment.
You know what the hell you got in your apartment. Right. You know what kind of furniture
right.
you got.
I'm in here. Wait a minute. And I'm in my apartment. He was in his apartment. Well, I think he was in a towel. I think he had either just got out of the shower or something. But
he was eating ice cream on his couch.
He was sitting on his couch.
He was on his couch watching TV, yeah.
Right.
When he walked in.
And also, the thing is that where everybody's apartment has a different scent. I don't give a damn who you are. Everybody's apartment and house has a different scent. You should know the difference of the smell when you walk into your apartment or home than something else.
Yeah. Just standing in front of the door, your front door right there. Doesn't even have to be open because it's coming underneath the door. You know?
Right.
So, and you're
right. So now they're trying to appeal the sentence. I'm sorry. I just feel like this is just something that should not even be considered.
I agree.
It's just about murder. Like Officer Crenshaw, Officer Mason, I appreciate when they come on the show, I love them being on because they're experienced officers, they're veterans, and they share a lot of knowledge of how they would handle a situation. When you got these rookie cops, you know, and granted, she was off work, but what made her use deadly force before other options?
And how come? Now, according to, as we all know, she worked a long shift, but that should not be an excuse. Actually, that should be the fault of the police department to make her work long shifts with a stressful job.
She was dating that her partner as well, and her partner was a married man. But, you know, after she left her partner, working a long shift, now she's all dazed and, you know, flighty because she just left her partner. Oh, I love, and I'm so tired, and I'm just going up the stairs just thinking about him, and next time I'll see him, and I'm so stupid. And, you know, she panicked and just whipped out her gun because she was in a different mindset, and she just lost it. And that's not an excuse. That's actually, she should be held accountable for that because her head was not in the right place,
well,
and it
also
took the life of a human being.
Right.
She sees, I hate to use it, but she sees this black man in the apartment she claims is hers. And because brothers have been demonized for years, you can go back and look at as much as you want, that in the media, and that, you know, that they're going to rob you, they're going to do this, whatever. You walk in, she's a smaller woman, she sees this big brother in an apartment she believes is hers, and he, like you said, he's eating ice cream, and that gave you reason to shoot him? He's eating ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how big he is.
No weapon. No weapon at all.
He's eating ice cream. But where in the world did you believe that he was coming to get you? And as he told us, no, this is my apartment. No, this is my apartment. Now, mind you, you had enough time to look around and say, this is my apartment.
Right.
She didn't do that.
Exactly.
She didn't
do
that.
Yeah, I'm not laughing to make light of it, but that's the whole thing that I look at is where all of us, which, you know, we all know, you know your surroundings. You know when you walk through a door. It's like, as you said, you live in an apartment. You walk into a unit that's just below yours. And even if I blindfolded you, you would smell that it's not the same. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was marijuana in the air. In this case, it was Sam. I'm reading the case right now. So.
Right. But your senses
said, no, it wasn't hers.
Automatically. Your senses should automatically click in of where, no, this ain't my apartment. You know, my apartment don't smell like this. I take off the blindfold, and I don't care if the lights are off. You know that if you got this hanging lamp over here, or you got this table and chair over here, and you know what color it is because you see it every day, and then you look around, and you know, when you walk in, the sofa, I'm pretty sure the sofa is not the same color as the sofa that she has in her apartment.
Very true.
Pretty sure it is.
That's true.
Those are the things that should automatically click in your head of, wait a minute. Because nobody came in there and rearranged your apartment while you were at work.
Mm-mm.
No one did.
Or even switched things out. They would have had to.
Right.
And that didn't happen.
No one. So to me, I mean, for her to make that mistake, it had to have been pitch freaking black, like no electricity on, no lights on at all. But the truth is that where he was watching television. You know your TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what size screen you got. So all of a sudden you come home, and here's this black man sitting here eating ice cream in your apartment, watching your TV. You don't understand that, hey, wait a minute, something about this ain't right. I'm in the wrong place. But I still look at that whole thing about the door issue, and her lawyer is trying to blame now the complex. But I hadn't heard anything about any issues of other doors. And again, the mat. He had a red mat on his entrance. Totally different than what she had.
Right.
But as I said, she's they're trying to appeal her sentence from 10 years to almost 6 months.
Right.
If that happens, that is going to be one of the biggest travesties
and the justice system ever.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much more that we can talk about regarding these cases that are coming up. As you guys know, I hope you know, the other officers in the George Floyd case, that's coming up. The family's going to be able to see some more footage. What's the reason of having body cameras if they're not being shown? And not necessarily to the public, but to the family, right? What's the reason of having body cameras? Isn't that why they invented them? So we can see the officer's point of view?
I think it varies on the police stations, you know. But, yeah, that should be available if a family wants to see them. It's public property.
Right.
Well, it should be. You're right. That's public property. Our tax dollars pay for those cameras.
Mm-hmm.
We pay for them. So I'm waiting to see what happens, because the family's supposed to see what they saw, 20 seconds the first time? Now they're going to give them 20 minutes?
Oh, you mean in North Carolina?
Right. Right, right. On that case, 20 seconds the first time, this time 20 minutes, but there's 2 hours worth of video, according to the judge, that the victim is not in this in the other part of the video, so that's not relevant. Yeah, it is. It's relevant. To me, it is, because you know what? Officers can say some shit. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Officers can make some comments and kiki and ha-ha and laugh. We've seen that happen before. So I think all 2 hours should be at least shown to the family and to the lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've seen it happen. And by the way, here in Atlanta, I can't recall the gentleman's name, but you know about the shooting here in Atlanta where he grabbed the taser at the Wendy's and he shot back at the officer. They shot and killed him. They burned down the Wendy's and everything. Well, that officer has been reinstated. Y'all didn't know that, right? Not,
oh, I knew that.
Not okay. On patrol. Okay. They know not to put him back out on the streets. In administration.
And charges are still being filed against him, or he still has charges still. So he shouldn't really be back to work.
Yeah, right,
that's
right.
BS, but yeah.
He's back to work, right? He's definitely back to work, but on administrative duty. You know, I always said that. In fact, I posted it. You know, suspension with pay is really a vacation on the taxpayers' money. That's really what it is. Until they really, I said suspension, being suspended with pay, is really a vacation for folks on the taxpayers' money.
Mm-hmm.
If an officer, in most cases, is dealing with a situation like that, they're going to put him on suspension. And then when they do that, they can't stop paying him unless they fire him. Now, the mayor of Atlanta had him fired, but they said, no, that was wrong. It's a lot of interesting legal things that happens in these type of situations, because you have to find proof and legality to fire an individual when you don't have the evidence of wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they fought about, right? So they had to let him come back to work, but he's not on the streets, all right? It's interesting because, then he can sue. I remember here in Georgia of a she wasn't an officer. She was a probation officer, and she was harassed by another sheriff for Cobb County. She sued the county and got a ton of money and kept her job.
Think about it. She sued the county, got a ton of money. You know whose money that is? That's the taxpayers' money that she got.
She sued the county for sexual harassment or what? I didn't understand.
Right. She sued the county. Allegedly, she had reported it. Nothing was done. She sued, and she won the case.
Oh, okay.
And if I remember, her name was Rebecca Hatfield. She was a probation officer here in Cobb County. Sued and then kept her job. They couldn't fire her because then she could sue them again for wrongful termination.
Yes. But if
see
she
how
was
that shit
a victim of sexual harassment, why would she be fired for that? I'm just trying to understand. Maybe I missed something.
I'm going to pull up the case. I know it's available, but I'm going to pull it up.
No, she was a harasser. I get it, but
look, I mean, she was in a win-win situation, and her husband is an officer. So that's interesting. All right, so look, the time is 7:27. I want to go ahead and move on to what I really want to get to. 50 years ago, the album What's Going On by Marvin Gaye was released. And to this day, I mean, when you listen to this album, it speaks of what's going on right now. It really does. So let's listen to a track. Let's talk about it afterwards. I got a couple more I'm going to bring you guys. And I'm going to give you an interview that he did. Really interesting what he said. And Rolling Stone called this the best album of all time. That's amazing. And to be honest, I agree. You're listening to TMGF, the Michael Gaye Show, here on the TMGN, the Michael Gaye Network. We'll be right back.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and kiss here today. Picket line and picket sign. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Don't punish me for brutality. come on, talk to me. You can't see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on.
Right, right on. Right on.
Welcome back to the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show. And I really appreciate all my callers, my co-hosts that are here joining the show. And happy Mother's Day weekend to all the ladies that are listening. Happy Mother's Day weekend. Happy Mother's Day. That's Marvin Gaye, What's Going On. And 50 years ago, 1971, I believe is actually the date, that album was released, and it still is a classic, and as I said, Rolling Stone calls it the best album of all time. How many of you guys own that album, if I don't mind asking? How many folks, and all the mics are open, 323-338, if you have a question or comment, go ahead and hit the number one. I'll open up your mic. If you have a question or comment, but
my parents own.
How many guys have that album?
My parents.
Oh,
did.
I got it.
Yeah, I didn't own it, but my parents did. Matt, Chicago, and all the greats back then. But yeah, this is a classic, and you know what? Its relevancy is more than ever. So you could get $72 for this album right now on Merch Bar. I think the least is $23. It's held its value. That says a lot. That says a lot.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. It says a hell of a lot. I see that 323 open up their mic. They wave their hand. So I'm going to open up their mic. And 323-338.
Hi. Michael. Oh, my gosh. Let me just say happy Mother's Day to all the mothers. Even if you're a mother in spirit or a grandmother and auntie, you're a mother. You're a mother in spirit. This is Mother Earth that we're on, and Mother Nature is rules the four seasons. So happy Mother's Day to all mothers. Mothers and fathers in my book need to be celebrated every day. And so that's what I was doing earlier today, was celebrating my mom and my sister. And they're the two reasons why I'm here. And Marvin Gaye, What's Going On? Michael and I had a conversation the other night. His music is relevant today as it was 50 years ago. He was ahead of his time. He was a musical prodigy. And I was sitting here listening to what the words meant, and they're very prevalent. The only thing, he didn't actually name any names, like 45 and so forth and so on. But there again, Michael, your show is prevalent and very timely every Sunday, even in spite of the changes that you've had to make recently. Change is good.
Every Saturday.
So,
every Saturday.
All the honor to all the mothers in your life, Michael, to the mothers that are the part of your show as producers, and the ones that call into your show as guests. Again, I salute all mothers. But Marvin Gaye is, wow. His where he was shot down in his prime right here in Los Angeles, Southern California, near, what is it, Adams and 26, 24,
actually,
something over there. Go ahead.
I know exactly where he was killed by his father. It was right off of Adams. My mom used to live in Hampton Manor. If you know who Lionel Hampton is, my mom and Lionel Hampton
were friends. Hampton Manor was where, you know, they called Adams Church Row, right? It was a bunch of churches. In fact, there was a Korean church right next door to where my mom lived. But where Marvin was shot, his family lived on Gramercy Place. His mom, him, and his dad lived on Gramercy Place, which was less than 2 blocks away from my mom's house. So, yeah, I was in California then. I was living over there, Cochrane, off of Cochrane. And I remember when, you know, it was right around April Fool's, and a lot of folks thought it was a joke.
It was on April Fool's.
Thought it was a joke. And this was before internet. Yeah, before internet, when people would put up, you know, false bullshit, excuse my language, but thought it was a joke because it was April Fool's.
Mm-hmm.
And come to find out, it was true. And I remember later on that night, me and a friend of mine, we went down there to the house, and it was the most amazing thing you would see. That whole street for 5 blocks almost was cars parked and people playing. It was just like a collage of music. You'd hear what's going on over here, mostly me over there. They were playing, you know, Marvin songs from their cars, and it was just a ton of people outside of the house, all the way down the street. It was like a block party memorial. No one was drinking or, you know, acting crazy, but it was a hurtful moment because you know how folks make a memorial or a monument to a person, you know, that might got hit by a car on the side of the road. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Everybody came to the house where it happened. That's what happened that night. That was so amazing.
And how many people now, even in 2021, drive right by and have no idea?
I'm pretty sure quite a few.
Then there's others that drive by and secretly remember where they were when they heard that fact on April Fool's Day. So, Michael, thank you so much for the history that you continue to bring with us and take us. When you play your music, Michael, we stop whatever we're doing, and it takes us back to when we heard those songs for the very first time. So thank you for taking us back down the road of memory lane. When Karen White's on your show or anybody else and I'm available, I'm listening in. I'm sitting on my back porch right now enjoying the 77-degree weather here in Southern California, and I applaud you, Michael Gay. Let me say happy Father's Day to you. Mother's Day and Father's Day is every day. I'll mute out now, and I'll continue to enjoy the rest of the show. Michael, you need to get an award on one of the best R&B shows with factual people and takes us back. Again, Michael, thank you for finding your purpose, all your guest hosts, and all your team are rocking and rolling. You know who believes in you.
Thank you so much.
On a Saturday. Yeah. Thank you.
I love my family. Thank you, Andrea James. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Wow, I didn't expect that, but thank you. Okay, so look, you guys, I want to play some more music, but before I do that, what I want to do is go to timing. You think about that song, what's going on? What does that make you think about? And
that music takes
as I said, I was 9 years old. I was 9 when that came out, but go ahead.
That music takes me back to East St. Louis, Illinois. That takes me back when my family was together. You know, that music, those family members that are gone, that stuff hits home. You know, when I hear that song, man, I miss my brother Benny, my mom, my dad, friends, just my cousins, things we did. I mean, it was the simpleness of life. You know, that's back when, you know, gas was 50 cent or whatever. You got penny candy and, you know, and we had hot summers racing in the street with no shoes on. And, you know, even though it was a traumatic time, like you said, me and you, we were kids, you know, and our parents were, you know, they were going through it, bro. They were dealing with. You know, you had the Vietnam War. You had,
the riots were in the 60s.
Martin Luther King was assassinated. Malcolm X got assassinated in 63. You had John F. Kennedy got killed. You know, you just signed the voters' right. You just signed the Civil Rights Act in 64. And then you... you had signed, what was that? You signed the Voting Rights Act of 65, you know. Right.
And you know what? But I'm sorry to interrupt because, you know, it's 7:41. But and Marvin speaks about that, of where when he was looking at all this stuff that was happening in the 60s, that's what made him decide to write these songs.
He put them all together. Wait a minute. Yeah, he wrote, but the guy who wrote What's Going On, the way Smokey Robinson tells it, is that there was a guy from the Four Tops who had seen all the problems that were going on in the world, and he wrote down this stuff. And he said, "I'm gonna take this to Marvin and see if he would like it," and that's when What's Going On got put together. From what Smokey Robinson said. So I just saw that on a little bit of the Don Lemon thing.
Okay, so let me do this real quick. I want you guys to hear, and it's 7:42. I'm going to try to squeeze in. I want you to hear this 5 minutes. I might cut it a little bit short. But let's hear Marvin Gaye from the man himself.
What shall I say about 1975 through 1983 hasn't been very good. I've been happy and most of the time, pretty depressed. I have, as I said before, a lot of feeling inside for people and my love, my life, my job, what I feel I'm here for, my purpose. And I'm a little reluctant sometimes to get on with it. I'm afraid I'm much too emotional. To be an artist, really, to be a really good one, to be on the job all the time. I guard my heart pretty well these days because I'm afraid if I ever fell in love again and I met the wrong woman, I don't imagine I'll live. I think that being with Motown has been an incredible experience for me, and I've loved it. I have some magnificent memories, and I wouldn't pay anything for them.
Not to be specific about the revenge, but there must be a sense of, aha, I'm back on top, and I'll show you. Yes?
You know I'm honest, don't you?
Mm.
I think you're playing unfair, because I am honest. Yes, in a sense, yes. But not totally.
There's nothing wrong with that, though. Those are human, normal feelings to have.
Yeah, but that's just it. I don't want to feel human and normal. I just want to be an artist. And I hate those human, normal feelings. I like the feelings I have as an artist when I'm out in the woods in the rain or sitting by myself in the sun. I don't like the idea of... those other little nasty, nagging things that I like to get back at people because of my Aries blood and my tenacity or whatever. Yes, there's a certain satisfaction. I chuckle a lot. This whole revenge thing is interesting because when I accepted my American Music Award from Dick Clark, I had this marvelous acceptance speech already to say these nice things cleverly and get back at those that I thought needed a few words of encouragement. And I don't know if you saw the show, but I paused for a few seconds and something told me, don't be ridiculous. Just accept this award and say thank you and praise God and get the heck off the stage.
How about a Grammy? Like to have one?
I'd love to win a Grammy. I've sat at the Grammys so many years now hoping I'd win an award, and Lou Rawls has won them all from me. So I don't think I'm bitter about that, but the very last time he won one from me, he gave me such a smile, I got chills from it. It's number three, and I told my wife I was going to tackle him and came down off the stage and grab it and cause a big sink at the Grammys, but she didn't think that was too wise an idea.
Is there discrimination on the radio? Black artists discriminated against on certain radio and some FM stations?
Well, of course, there's lots of it. Not only is there discrimination, but there is tampering with one's art, which drives me berserk. I wouldn't think that Leonardo da Vinci would put up with somebody putting a different sort of finger on the Mona Lisa, or an ear, or changing an ear or nose or the eyes or something. He's an artist, and when he finishes his work, it's his work. It's his life's work. It's his blood.
All right, we're back. I want to share that interview, and if you guys were able to hear it clearly, I know sometimes it's not as clear, but interesting interview and what he shared of how he feels, how he felt. This guy was so amazing.
Well, Mike,
so
you know,
amazing.
I know that pain. I know that pain as an artist. You know, I know that. You know, like you said, I just want to be me. You know, when you just want to do your thing as an artist and live and everything. And he was trying not to get into all that with folks. And he let you know he was in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
He told you how sensitive he was to life,
right,
to what was going on, and how things were affecting him. You know, and a lot of people, you never hear about black people going to therapy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They don't usually tell that because they don't believe in therapy. But, you know, that changed because somebody told them, man, you need to get you some help. You know, someone said it to him, mm-hmm. and trust me, it was something dealing with family. He came from dysfunction. And most artists do come from dysfunction. And they have to address mm-hmm. those issues. They write about it. They see what's going on in the world. They have no peace. They're trying to find peace within so you can really enjoy the fruits of your labor. Cannot
right.
find that peace. You're not going to be able to enjoy that.
And the thing is that where, you know, I'm not going to stop with this show of sharing so much talent that this brother had. And by the way, I want to let you guys know, some of you guys may not watch CNN, but tune in to CNN tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. It is the story about Marvin Gaye's What's Going On album, 50 years, and how it definitely does relate to what we're dealing with. You know, 50 years later, this man had a vision of what he saw 50 years ago, and he's not here anymore. He's not here anymore. But that album, and if you don't have the album, please listen to the songs. Listen to them and think about the fact that, oh, my God, this is what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
There's you'll see Smokey Robinson, you'll see Stevie Wonder, you'll see a host of artists who are going to be on that show. This is not a Republican Democrat thing. It's just a fact of where this is what's happening now, and Marvin Gaye put it to song 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. If you've never heard the music, tonight is the night for you to go ahead and listen to it and watch the show tomorrow night on CNN.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that as far as who wrote the song, and on the song facts page for different artists, but in particular Marvin, it does speak about the three golfing buddies who happen to be Motown hitmakers, Al Cleveland, Four Tops member Reginald O.B. Benson, and singer Marvin Gaye. So Marvin wrote the lyrics, and they wrote the music, and they put it together. Yeah. So.
And as I said, and that's the thing. He was so creative as far as words go. And what I love about this album is that where the rhythm section stays the same, but the how should I put it? You hear the drums and you hear the congos and bongos going throughout almost every song, right? But they change the tempo a little bit every now and then. They'll change there's certain things that they would change, but the format is still there. It's almost like when I listened to like Ashford and Simpson when they did an album that I love called Street Opera. It's an ongoing thing. Marvin was doing that, you know what I'm saying? Where there was no break. It just kept going through. Had a little bit of slowdown, and then all of a sudden it just went right into the next song. You know what I mean? I love that song. And that's what he did.
I think
he was probably the creator, well, not the creator, but one of the masters of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Your previous guest on the phone, Happy Mother's Day to her, too. And she was saying, Marvin Gaye, you know, was ahead of his time, and that is so true in many ways. This was the first Motown song that made a powerful political statement, and only a certain person could do that at that time. That had that tone in his voice, the tone that could make you feel to understand what he's saying, and you know, it was a message that was accepted, you know, willingly. As far as just talk to me, he was talking to you through his songs. And that was the first one. And even to this day, you know, his songs will actually give me goosebumps, chicken skin, just because of the tenderness
and the
message that's in them.
About it, the thing is that, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the thing is that what I find amazing, and I really have to give credit to Don Lemon to do this show, though, tomorrow, and I'm really looking forward to it, is that album talked about politics, talked about war, it talked about sexuality, it talked about everything. It talked about so many things.
Talked about mercy.
That was happening before.
Sammy Terrell.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It talked about so many things that were happening 50 years ago, but when you sit back and listen to that album, and I'm saying this to everybody. You listen to that album, it's talking about today. And this man is dead. It's amazing that he left a treasure of music. Really, it's really telling us what we're dealing with now. That's my point. That's how come I wanted to have this conversation. He's telling us about now. Hey, look, you guys, we got 6 minutes left, and I really want to go back into this again probably next week a little bit. We got some great guests coming up soon, but I want to kind of like follow up on this a little bit, maybe next week. But thank you guys, I love you so much to tune into the TMGS. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. We love you. If not for you, we would not exist. So with that being said, thanks to all my co-hosts who chimed in, all the callers. We'll talk to you next week. And, hey, enjoy the rest of the weekend. Here's one more from Marvin before we get out of here. Good night.
Thank you.